the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Molhern, this is Global Denmark.
Hello and welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. Well, we recently had the pleasure of sitting down with Kay Zander Mellish. Kay is the author of four books, including her most recent book, Working with Americans, Tips for Danes. She's also authored the best-selling How to Live in Denmark and How to Work in Denmark. Kay does voiceover. She is a former employee of Danske Bank, Saxo Bank, and has given many, many speeches, both in Denmark and abroad, about the issues she's passionate about. In this wide-ranging conversation, we explored how to work with Americans, looking at cultural misunderstandings between Danes and Americans, both in work and in society. We talked about internationalization in Denmark and its development over the last two decades, and how welcoming or unwelcoming Danes could be. So lots of good stuff. Without further ado, we bring you Kay Zander Mellish. We are back. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Ed Lay. Ed, what's going on?
You always frame that slightly differently, and I'm never really sure how to respond. Like, I prepare something in advance, and then I think, no, I can't say that now that he's framed it like that.
My job is to
but I'm
you
okay.
On your toes.
How are you?
I am well, thank you. And we are here with today's special guest, Ms. Kay Zander Mellish. How are you, Kay?
I'm doing fabulous, thank you.
Thanks for coming by. Okay. I know you're a busy woman right now this time of year.
I am lucky to be a busy woman, yes.
Well, thanks so much. Kay, you have recently come out with your
fourth book,
which is How to Deal with Americans, Tips for Danes, or?
Working with Americans, Tips for Danes.
Working with Americans, Tips for Danes.
That's the first of two books. There'll be a companion book next year, Working with Danes, Tips for Americans.
Okay. So to our Danish audience.
Yes.
What are some key tips on how to work with these Americans like you or I?
Well, I think the number one thing you have to do is realize it's a different country. And it seems obvious, but Danes see so much American media, so much American TV and music and online material, that they don't always realize that America is not just Denmark with bigger cars. And they go there and they do not realize either the size or the diversity of the U.S. That if you can, your product can be a huge hit in Massachusetts and in Utah, nobody cares. So it's important for them to get a sense of where they want to be in the U.S. and what they can offer to that small area. Every state is different. Sometimes the same state has two different personalities, like California, for example.
So a lot of these tips in your new book are about how to understand the American market in terms of outbound, or is it for Danes that are working with Americans here in Denmark?
It can be both. Many of the groups that I have spoken to, and I've been around the country speaking to people that work with Americans, have trouble understanding their American colleagues. For example, here in Denmark, we talk about not having too big arm movements. You know, if you're a mature person, you're calm, you're cool, you're collected, you keep an even tone. But Americans are enthusiasts. See, we love exclamation points. Yeah. So when a Dane shows up and they have a calm, cool, even tone, the Americans think she's bored or that she's not interested. He's not interested in the deal. And the Dane's like, yeah, I am. But for them to act enthusiastic is to act childish. So that's a real misunderstanding.
That's only at the Julefrokost.
Yeah, exactly. The child is the Julefrokost. Absolutely. I had a Danish marketing manager who would get a lot of material from the U.S., and he would go through and he would cross out all of the exclamation points. He's like, they sound like shouting. And the Americans are like, no, it means we love our product and we love our customers and we're enthusiastic. So it's just a total misunderstanding of enthusiasm level is one of the problems between Americans and Danes.
So once you've got an understanding of the different natures, what do you then do with it? How do you accommodate for the fact that Americans make bold hand gestures and Danes may appear bored and don't make the bold hand gestures? How do they accommodate for bringing an American into a team, or and how should they act around this person, or how should they treat them differently?
I think understanding where the other person is coming from is key. And we particularly see that when it comes to bosses. We have an American boss and a Danish team, or people having to deal with American bosses who are parallel to them. An American boss needs much more control than a Danish boss. And she needs that control because she's worried about litigation all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I am the boss of an American team, I have to make sure there's no racism on the team, no sexual harassment. I've got to know everything that's going on with the product. This diet drives Danes crazy because they like much more independence. Like, what is this American micromanager doing? Why is she CCing me on all these things? It's driving me bananas. If you understand why she is doing these things, then you'll be able to work a little bit better. So I think the more we understand each other, the more we can give each other a little bit of room.
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, what Americans call management, Danes would refer to as micromanagement. And there is that distinction. We've kind of fleshed it out a little bit between management and leadership. And leadership in the Danish context, what we talk about is about high trust, flat hierarchy. Now, is kind of the approach you talk about, is the goal in and of itself, one is to understand each other.
Mm.
So that common understanding of your Danish values are this, and therefore there could be practices and rituals that manifest themselves, and also vice versa in American. What do you do with that knowledge then? Because either I would think that you shake hands and say, okay, agree to disagree, or you one dominant party tries to assimilate the other. What do you see on the ground in terms of at Danish organizations with these different power dynamics?
I think you learn to take it on board and add it to your calculations. I think whenever you come into contact with another culture, you take things that work for you and you leave behind things that don't work for you. I lived in Hong Kong for a couple of years, for example, and I learned the local culture had a lot of patience that I learned to take on board as an American. I think that as a Dane, you can take on board some of the Americans' openness. Sometimes it's called superficiality. But one of the things I train people to do is respond to the eternal question, which you just asked, how are you? That drives Danes crazy, because she doesn't really want to know how I am. So what I teach people is you need to respond with one positive detail.
Mm.
How are you? Oh, it's actually great. You know, I like the winter weather. You know, how are you? Good. I had a good weekend with the kids. A lot of relaxing. And then you're done with the one positive detail. Never respond with a negative detail while they're trying to fix things. How are you doing? I'm really hungry. Oh, let me get you a sandwich. So these are just easy tactics you can use to get along a little bit better.
And I guess in Denmark you would say, well, the weather is not as bad as it was yesterday, to be a positive person.
But this, Thomas, you've really hit on something, because Danes like that sarcasm, that the cantaloupe, that irony, that comes across as negativity to the Americans.
How do you interpret Yendelo for our audience? You know, we hear this concept a lot, and I've heard that some it's about humility, but others have said that it's something quite different.
I think Yentelov is not, it's the downside of equality, not thinking you're better than anybody else. And as I frequently tell people when they ask me about the difference between the U.S. and Denmark, Denmark is like a band. You're going to stay within that band. You will not be sleeping on the street. But if you try to go higher than the top of the band, you're going to get a lot of pushback. In the U.S., you can be sleeping on the street, but you can also be Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg. You can go up, 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 up. Yentelov is what happens when you try to go outside that band. And originally when I came here, I worked in the IT industry. So many of the people that I worked with, young, smart, ambitious engineers, they don't live in Denmark anymore. They live in San Francisco, they live in Singapore, they live in London. Because, first of all, the people give them a bad attitude when they try to excel.
Right.
And secondly, they get sick of the tax structure. They're like, man, I'm working 8 hours a week, I got a great job, my buddy's on the couch playing video games, the tax structure's equaling us out. I don't like that. So Yentelo keeps us in the middle, supports some of the weaker people in society, which you could say is a good thing, but it also pushes down on some of the stronger people in society.
And how has that felt? You mentioned kind of the Danish humor, maybe as a tool for enforcing that, as kind of saying you're not better, here comes a sarcastic little dig. Do you see any other kind of tools inside organizations to try to keep people level?
I think that Danish bosses try to pretend they're not bosses a lot of the time. I always say that when you go into a room of Danish business people, you cannot immediately see who the boss is. Right. Now, in China, you certainly could. Who's got the biggest watch? Who is everybody, you know, arrayed around? In the U.S., you could. You know, oh, she's got the nicest jewelry. She's got the nicest outfit.
Yeah.
She's got the whiteboard.
She's got the whiteboard. She's got, you know, everybody's inspired by her. They see her. But in Denmark, ooh, you know, I don't want to pretend like I'm, of course, you are, you know, more in charge and have more money and have more responsibility. But people don't want to pretend they're a boss because it's an anti-authoritarian culture. You know, if you're the boss, you're a figure of fun.
When I got into leadership, my boss, who's a Dane, told me, look, to understand hierarchy here, you have to realize that everyone has liberty, equal value, but there's asymmetric relations.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of equality, but there's this inbuilt understanding that, yes, if things start to fuck up, there's someone who stands with the responsibility, hopefully.
You mentioned openness there before, and that the Danes could perhaps learn something from the Americans to add in a little bit of openness. Something that we frequently encounter in this podcast interviewing Danes is that the first value that they speak about is trust and how it's a society of trust. But then when we dig deeper into what are the Danish values, number two is always openness. And the thing that that always strikes us is that we don't see that frequently. So what are the blind spots of Americans coming in, and what are the blind spots of the Danes that often they don't see that they kind of give off to other people?
Well, I think when you take it back to openness, I think your openness in Denmark within your circle, you're open with people you can trust and know. Yeah, there's not a lot of deception, there's not a lot of lying, and I think that is one of the things people mean by openness. But it's not an open culture. It's very difficult to become a Dane. I mean, I'm a Danish citizen. I don't feel Danish. My kid was born here. She has blonde hair and blue eyes. She doesn't feel Danish. Yeah. And all her friends are all half-halves, you know, Pakistani Danes and Iranian Danes and African Danes, because they also don't quite feel Danish. They speak Danish to each other. They go to Danish school. It's very hard to get into that circle.
Yeah, we've talked about that in terms of both looking at expats, but also Danes coming back, and this culture of exclusivity as compared to maybe Ireland and how they treat Irish abroad, you know, and you can be Irish if you just have a grandfather who's related. And we see kind of a different approach in Denmark. How do you guide Americans in terms of navigating that exclusivity, you know, when they meet this? Because, you know, Americans, they can be really depressed if they feel like their energy that they've come with just gets, boom, flattened.
Sure, and you see that in the Facebook groups all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, the people, oh, you know, I try so hard. And then, it is tricky to make friends, and it takes time. And one of the reasons that it's tricky to make friends is Danes really value their time. They value their time more than money, more than prestige. So if you are my friend, I'm going to take my time to be together with you. We have to be very valuable friends. And that's why friends often last a lifetime. And people will tell you, you know, hey, okay, you're great, but I don't have time for any more friends. And that's because here...
That's interesting.
Yeah, friendship is deeply rooted. It lasts longer than most marriages. So here comes the American, or the person from China, or the person from Chile, or it doesn't really matter. If you're beyond the university age, if you're 25, 35, 45, boy, is it hard to make friends. It really is.
That's really interesting. You mentioned the time.
Yeah, I find that a lot with my Danish clients, and they're predominantly CEOs, but they will spend a few hours a week with one or two people, and I will say to them, how in touch with your friends are you? When we kind of first start talking, they'll say, oh, I've been really terrible for the last few years because it's got so busy. I haven't seen them very much. And then I dig into it, and I'm like, well, you see your friends more than I've seen mine in years, but I don't think that I wouldn't class what I do as infrequent, and they would class what they do as infrequent, and it's weekly, you know, often once or twice a week they'll see the same people and get together over. And I can see how if you're going to be, if you're a CEO or you know, let's say you've got a 60 hour a week job, with your family on top of that and friends, it is going to be challenging to fit anybody new into that. And what I see as a result of that is that there are two distinct communities. There's an expat community and a Danish community, and they only ever intermingle at work.
Yeah, I think there is a very separate expat community, often of English speakers. It's often not a not a language question. Somebody asked me, who are the foreigners that are best integrated in Denmark? And I always say it's people married to Danes, because they come into the family circuit, and then they start to make Danish friends. When you come on your own or with a partner who is also an international, it can be really hard to work your way in. Kids are a good way to start.
We see that all the time. And one of the things that we see in terms of facilitating the integration, too, are these Danes that have been abroad and come back. These ambassadors, right? Mm-hmm. They get the international perspective, but also maybe have their foot in the door with a network, or they understand the language and culture.
But they understand what it's like to be in somebody else's country.
Absolutely.
A more forgiving, I would say.
How if you're giving tips for Danes on working with Americans... Americans have many, many flaws, but they also have some, I think, universally accepted talents in terms of branding, marketing, innovation. What tips can you give to Danes for tapping into that maybe potential that's a kind of a cultural manifestation? Because, I mean, we talked to Rufus Gifford, and we were talking about Jendelon and kind of personal versus professional humility. He says that personal humility is a wonderful consequence of Jendelon, and he's all about it. But he saw it as a real challenge here, this professional humility and the ability to stand up and say, this is our product, this is our service, it's great, and we want it to be out there in the world.
Sure. I had a customer who developed a safety device for oil platforms, and he was talking about it. He said, we had the luck and good fortune to develop one of the safest devices on the market. But it sounds like you opened your door in the morning and there was a safety device. Look, it's a safety device. It's on my lawn. It's one of the... You worked your tail off to do that. So, and there, exactly what you see. It's the end of the
world. We had the luck and good fortune. And we're hoping to have that going forward with our new business ideas. It's like, how do you buy into that?
Exactly.
So, how do you work in Denmark?
Well, this is a huge question when you bring in internationals, because there are so many unwritten rules for working in Denmark that they don't know. And so they do it wrong. An obvious example is people come and they come to a job interview and they recite their degrees. Well, I have a degree in this and I have a degree in this and I got 1, 2, 3 on the exam. Where's my job? That is not how Danes think. It's more of a storytelling situation. How can you be plug and play in our organization and make it a better place to work? And the social fit is really key. I often tell people, Danish employers confronted by person A, who is flawless, such a gifted technician, and person B, who's a pretty good technician, but a really friendly person to be around, they'll pick person B every single time. Every single time. That can be frustrating to internationals, because the sort of the internationals who make their way here are very gifted people. They're hard workers, they've done well in school, and they're probably good self-promoters.
Yep.
And then they come to Denmark and it doesn't work anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. They need to, I've got a project to do. Well, we have a cake, The maid is going on vacation. What?
Yeah,
a project.
Exactly.
So you have to stop. You have to eat the cake. So that's one of the things I've tried to do with the book, How to Work in Denmark. Take some of those unwritten rules and write them down.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry. And how do, why is it, do you know, that Danes don't want to hear about the qualifications?
I think that they've read your resume, and if they've invited you to an interview, they take those
qualifications. That's the given,
for
right,
granted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I noticed. I haven't been asked in 15 years working in the UK what my qualifications are. It's the first question. For the first year I was here, it was the first question I was asked.
Well, you're
every
a foreigner,
time.
You have to be brought into the circle of trust.
That's it.
But once you've had, 10 Danish clients, well, I, train Hans Hansen, and
then you're in the trust.
Yeah.
That's what a tip.
In.
Yeah, in the circle. As a tip I often give to people who come here and want to look for a job, take a course here, because then you've got your stamp by, Niels Brock or CBS or something. Now I can trust you. You could be to the absolute best school in India or Nigeria or Nepal, and nobody's heard of that. I don't know who you are. Oh, you took a course at CBS? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And you see a lot of that there is this, there is one path to truth.
Interesting.
And it's the Danish path. Have you ever walked into a Danish office and seen diplomas on the walls? I've never seen that.
Never.
never seen that as an accomplishment, or when you're reading off someone's CV at a distinguished graduate of this university, you never hear it.
Oh, just like people don't like to use their titles as well.
They don't.
Executive senior vice president, I don't care.
Yeah, I was at a talk last night, and one of the Danish CEOs got up and said, "I hate saying CEO in Denmark. I love saying it when I go to America." And there's a lot of truth in that. I think there was an interview with the Danish head of the Royal Ballet, who's in New York as well, and he said that when he comes to Denmark, he has to introduce himself as a dancer. And when he goes to America, he has to introduce himself as the lead in the Royal Ballet.
This is true, so that people will take you seriously.
The power distance.
Yep. Yeah, so people don't want to hear your grand title here, and they do in America. And I think there's a lot behind that, and there's a lot to learn from that.
I think it's not just America. I think it's much of the rest of the world. I have an acquaintance who is a professor, and she was doing some work together with a professor in India. And because her, I guess she's Danish, she didn't sign her name, you know, Professor Maida CBS. She just said, Maida. And, of course, he would use his full title because that meant a lot to him, his title. So they worked on the project. It was very successful. At the end, he said to her, you know, Maida, it has been such a pleasure working with you on this project. But now that we're almost done, I'll need to speak to the real professor. Because
you're looking at
him. Yeah, well, but, you know, why would she, if she had a title, why wouldn't she use it? His title was precious to him.
Because it carries no value in the society, right?
It does. Well, almost a negative value. Hi, I'm the CEO. Hey, you're an asshole.
Yeah, you just went down to minus one. Thank you. You're all that time you put in just got you to this.
Yeah, totally true.
So the top 35 mistakes that Danes make in English, is this when speaking English?
No, it is a combination of things. You know, when I first got here, I worked for Danske Bank for a while, I worked for Saxo Bank, I worked for Carlsberg. So I did a lot of fixing up executive speeches. And these are very highly educated people. And I would run into the same mistakes again and again. And the book is a bit of a joke, because if you did my mistakes in Danish, it would be 3,500.
Sure.
The three-volume, me too.
By the Encyclopedia Britannica. But this was just like a fun little joke book. It actually started out as a meme. I had the top 10 mistakes, and then that circulated. Then I made the next 10. I thought, well, you know, I might as well make some money off this. So I put it into a book. It's very popular among Danes. I've had some foreigners get all offended, like, how dare you come to their land? But, you know, I mean, Danes are fabulous at making fun of themselves.
It's refreshing. I'm just trying to think of it linguistically, the one off the top of my head. I know things like furnitures.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, it's actually not a book.
The uncountable nouns. That's it.
Just like I'll never get all the eens and the ets right. The verb endings will always be tricky for them because they don't have verb endings. She go to work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
So
I struggle with that too.
So I've actually also encountered that a lot in my old life, that making the implicit rules of work culture or the culture at large explicit is so crucial. Because everyone kind of understands the game in Denmark if you're raised here.
Of course.
And that transfers over also to work culture, that there's actually not a lot of written manuals, you know, when we're talking about the onboarding process, and here's what to expect. It's just implied.
Yeah.
Have you experienced that as well?
Oh, absolutely. That's what the book is about. And for me, one of the challenges was I came to Denmark directly from Manhattan. I had been working in the media world in Manhattan. I worked for Dow Jones, the Wall Street Journal. I worked for CNN. So I was used to sharp elbows.
Yeah.
And that was not appreciated here. It took me for a while to realize I needed to work with a team, and I didn't have to defend my position all the time. So everyone that comes here, whether they're coming from Nigeria or the Middle East or France or Southern Europe or China, is coming with their own preconceptions from their own market. One of the things I've noticed a lot is that we take gender equality pretty much for granted here. But women, particularly from Southern Europe, particularly young women from Southern Europe, highly educated, do not want to contradict an older man. That's not done. Most people do not want to contradict their boss, which a Danish boss expects.
Yeah.
And if he hired you, if she hired you, she hired your opinion. She hired your expertise.
Yeah.
She's going to be more annoyed if you don't give your opinion when she's doing something wrong. She paid for that opinion.
And vice versa is true as well, right? If you're an American boss or an English boss coming in, you have to expect things are going to be contradicted and challenged. And
not only that, yeah. but you need to solicit the views of everyone on your team.
Yeah,
that's a good way to piss off your team, not getting consensus before you make a decision.
Sure.
And also, it's important to show respect for everyone on the team. One of my clients was talking about an American manager who came to visit the office in Newland. And he had a one with Jesper Johansson, whatever. Went in, talked to Jesper, had a good meeting, left, went to the airport. Huge mistake. He needed to go through the office and greet every single person on the team. You know, hi, MK. Hi, MK. Hey, it's nice to meet you. Oh, nice to meet you. Down to the cleaner and the coffee lady. He needed to greet all those people. Those are his team. He didn't do it. People were angry.
Yeah, and it's those little things, right, that could quickly do a tailspin into the, somewhere you don't want to go.
Indeed.
So you've been in Denmark now for...
more than 10 years.
More than 10 years. What have you experienced in terms of internationalization of Copenhagen, of Denmark, within the last 10, 20 years? Because we can see that there is this huge push more and more. I think, for global talent and to retain that talent. But at the same time, we see counterproductive legislation and some trends that kind of seem to go counter to that narrative. What have you seen in terms of major progressions and where we are today?
The change has simply been so rapid just in the time that I've been here. It is much more international than it was when I first arrived.
Okay.
And you have people from all over the world. You have a lot of people from Southern Europe, some Americans, lots of smart people from China and India. There's some lovely talent here. And there's also talent at all levels of the economic spectrum. I mean, Copenhagen, Denmark could not run without international workers, from the people that do work in the hospitality industry to the people all the way at the top. Carlsberg, of course, and Danske Bank now both have international CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
Both,
that's right.
Yeah. So it is the Danes are working on it. The Danes are working on it. It's not easy for them because it's not built into the culture. Unlike the UK, unlike France, unlike the US, it is not by nature an immigrant culture. I remember when I first came here, people would constantly make fun of my accent in Danish. I don't know if they still do that anymore. But, you know, they were not used to hearing someone speaking Danish with
yeah.
an accent. We are all used to hearing someone speaking English with an accent. And I give them points for trying, basically.
Sure.
That was so frustrating when I was learning Danish, too, that where I thought I said a word and that I didn't pronounce it 100% correct, but it was so close. I'm thinking, what about the principle of charity that you could easily intuit what I meant in this context? But it's just because they've never heard it spoken
sure.
in that way.
Oh, and Danish humor too. You know, everyone needs to be able to make fun of themselves.
That's right.
So, which doesn't always come across that way if you're a newcomer. But it's become much more international, particularly in the younger groups. I think one out of every five person born in Denmark has at least one non-Danish parent. This is a changing world.
Wow. What would you attribute that to? I mean, what's working in terms of attracting internationals?
Combination of things. Danes travel more and they fall in love. People come here, it's a strong economy, particularly compared to Southern Europe or the Baltic countries, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, a lot of people from those countries here. It's a fun place to be right now, too. I mean, when I talk to groups of Danes, and I talk about internationalization, I always talk about the fact, you know, hey, 100, 150 years ago, Denmark was the poor country. Yeah, Denmark had war, Denmark had poverty. And so we saw literally tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of Danes leave their country within a very short period.
Mm.
You guys used to be the refugees. Now you're the prosperous country. People are coming here.
And in what ways are Denmark welcoming to this ever-growing international community? In which ways are they not welcoming? Where could they be better?
I think, honestly, they are welcoming to most people who either study or get a job and contribute to the overall society. They're particularly welcoming to people that have a Danish partner. I know a lot of people, I have never heard, even people on the right wing say, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have married that black girl. I've never, ever heard that. When people complain about foreigners, it's almost always about people who don't contribute to the community.
Yeah, I haven't felt any kind of unwelcomeness at all. Apart from one guy, and I was going down the bike lane the wrong way, just outside ISJ. He yelled at me. He was old. And then I said, well, sorry, what's wrong? He's like, I don't want to talk to you. Because he heard that I was English
yeah, yeah.
as well. But other than that guy.
But there's a fabulous program, sorry for derailing a bit, that puts newly arrived foreigners together with old people so they can practice their Danish. Because the only two groups of people that really don't speak excellent English here in Denmark are the very young, under six, and the very old, I would say probably over 80. So this program in Copenhagen will actually match a newly arrived foreigner who wants to speak Danish with, you know, Kirsten or Benta that's in the old folks' home who's got lots of time to speak Danish.
I'm really curious to hear that, how that goes, because it's an interesting initiative.
Yeah, it's been going for a while.
Okay.
Matter of fact, they had a fun video. They had a guy from India. He was not a young man. I'd say maybe he was 40. He was matched with Kirsten. And he wanted to say to Kirsten, after they'd been hanging out, she would go take a walk. But his Danish wasn't perfect. So instead of saying, you know, skal vi tage en tur, he said, Kirsten, skal vi ikke tage en lur sammen? Which for you non-Danish speakers means, Kirsten, shouldn't we take a nap together?
Yes. Shall we have biblical relations?
Kirsten must have been 90. Yeah. I think you mean take a walk together.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So. But she was fine about it.
That's perfect. A lot of funny conversations coming from us. I got to see this.
Sure.
Well, Kay, I think now would be a great time to take a short break.
Super.
And then we will come back and wrap up the podcast today with our quick fire round.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
Okay, we are back with our quickfire round. The questions will be quickfire, your answers don't need to be. Do you have any habits, routines, or rituals that you do frequently to keep yourself mentally or physically sharp?
Yeah, well, I work out 3 or 4 times a week, and I have an incredibly slow Mac computer, so every time I get that little beach ball of death, I stand up, I do a few little arm waves.
Really?
You laugh, yeah. It takes, and you get so frightened out if you're doing your arm waves.
And life gives you beach balls of death.
And is that while you're writing, is that what you're doing mostly day to day?
I do a combination of things. I write both for my own website and for the BT. I do speaking engagements all over Denmark and occasionally outside of Denmark. And then I also do voiceovers.
Sorry, BT?
BT, the newspaper.
Ah, right.
I speak Danish well. I do not write Danish well enough to be published. So I work with a young translator who, quite frankly, often makes my work better in Danish. So
nice.
I'm lucky to have found him. I also do voiceovers for corporate videos. So, the podcast, the right place for you.
How did you develop your radio voice or your podcast voice?
Totally.
Did it just come
natural? Yeah, totally natural. I used to work for Danske Bank, and they needed someone to say, Danske Bank, the place to put your money.
There's a joke here after this, I know that we can...
And I enjoyed doing it. I used to be able to make tons and tons of money in it. That is not so true anymore because people can get voices from the U.S. for much cheaper. They don't pay Danish taxes.
Okay.
So, but I still do a fair amount of e-learning. You know, turn to page 3.
Okay.
Is this the correct answer? You're right. That's the correct answer.
Oh, my God. You do sound like that person.
Yeah, I am that person.
I just close my eyes and have you ever done any movies or shows?
Frozen 2.
Really?
No, I did an ad for Legos. Legos are Frozen 2 products. I have not done any movies, but I'm available. I'm available.
Okay.
Call me.
Okay.
You mentioned you work out 3 or 4 times a week. What does that look like?
I do weight training, spinning, cycling all over the place. I really love it. It keeps my brain clear, and it gives me a license to listen to some really trashy, like, celebrity podcasts. Because, you know, hey, I'm working out.
What are your podcasts of choice?
Oh, I like the Crazy Days and Nights podcast, which is an entertainment lawyer based in L.A. who gives you all the dish long before it comes out. I knew about Harvey Weinstein years ago. I knew about Jeffrey Epstein years ago.
Okay.
So,
totally
trashy, but, you know, hey, I'm lifting weights.
Exactly. I deserve this.
I deserve this. Yeah,
exactly. Kay, have you ever undergone any one event or experience that... you would credit with a huge leap forward in your career, or the person you become?
As a teenager, I was hit by a car, and I was in the hospital for a year and had to learn how to walk again.
Oh, my goodness.
So that makes you realize how fragile you are. As a reporter, I covered the Tiananmen Square events on June 4th, 1989. So that gives you a little...
You were there at the hotels nearby?
I was not at the hotels. I was in the square.
You were in the square?
Yeah. I'd spent several days there before talking to the students, so they knew it was coming. They totally knew. As a matter of fact, they sent some of the girls home the night before. They knew that was coming.
How did that affect you?
You realize that there is evil in the world, and that you need strength to defend against evil.
Did you have a mentor or mentors growing up that you particularly remember teaching you something or believing in you in such a way that made you, that drove you to be the person you are today?
No, I made so many mistakes along the way. I guess anyone who put up with me must have been my mentor. you know, I did the wrong thing sometimes. I was hired at the Wall Street Journal Europe when I was, I don't know, maybe 18 or 20. And I rewrote all the senior reporter stories to be a little bit better. It's amazing I'm still alive.
They loved that.
I was popular. No, I put my foot in my mouth again and again and again. So I probably will continue to do so for the rest of my life. So I give credit to anyone who didn't kill me.
Did you have a mentor when you came to Denmark in terms of how to live or how to work in Denmark, the very thing that you are trying to help people with?
It's interesting you say that because I was brought to Denmark on a corporate move, which meant they moved all my furniture and put me in a hotel. 5 months after I
the old-fashioned expat contracts
the
that they phase
yes.
out. Yep.
Well, 5 months after I arrived, the company was bankrupt. So I was in this country, didn't know anybody, didn't speak the language, and all this furniture, just like dining table and sofa.
Yeah.
You can't really just get back on the plane with all this furniture. So I stayed and found another job at another internet agency. They lasted 9 months before they went bankrupt. This was bubble times. Then I was unemployed for a year, and I had savings, but I didn't get unemployment compensation. The visa situation was not that type of visa. So in that year, not only did I learn Danish, but I went to every single museum in Copenhagen on their free day. And I got to the point where I was writing articles for the airplane magazines. What to do in Copenhagen? Well, the medical museum is free on Wednesdays. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just for reference, that stuff's not written in Denmark anymore. It's all written in the Philippines. Because people speak excellent English there, and they take very low wages, and they take it all off the internet.
Oh, it's open now.
Round Towers
sure.
open from 9 to 3. You know, they can find that as well as I can sitting in Bispebjerg.
Wow, okay.
So I was, after a year of unemployment, I was on my very last crown when I got a job at Danske Bank. And I did my best to make them bankrupt. I got really, really close. I didn't get them over the line. My regrets. But to answer your question, they assigned me to a buddy. And she was someone that would show me around and answer my questions and someone I could eat lunch with. And she made a real impact in my life because she insisted we speak Danish at lunch. During the day, we could speak English, but at lunch, we had to speak Danish.
Okay.
We would eat with other colleagues, and they did not want to speak English at lunchtime.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. Yeah.
Indeed. So but that was a gift for me because then I was forced to learn Danish. So without that, I don't know that things would have fallen in place the way they have.
Excellent.
You seem to have a real entrepreneurial streak. Where does that come from?
I'm American, man. I got everything.
Case closed.
The end. We're all the same.
But see, this is something that Americans and Danes have in common. We love a good business deal. And some cultures are not like that. You know, some go, ooh, business, yucky, dirty money. No, we love to make money.
I hear from a lot of people, though, the idea of I can't get a job, therefore I can't make money. Whereas you seem to have find something that isn't being done and just do that.
It's the way of the future. It really is.
I agree.
What is your biggest motivator and demotivator?
I'm a single mom with a kid in private school, so money is a really big motivator for me. I work all the time. I really like
how. So you haven't embraced the work-life balance with the 37.5 hours?
I have not. Not when you work for yourself, you've got a cruel boss. No, my biggest motivator actually is service, is helping people. I've had people tell me things like, your book saved my marriage. Now I understand my Danish wife.
Wow.
That means a lot to me. Or people say, oh, I realized it wasn't just me. And now that I know these things, I can fit in so much better.
Yeah.
So to me, that to be able to help, that's a good motivator.
Yeah. Excellent.
What's something weird about you?
What's something weird about me?
That you've never shared on air before.
Or off app, no.
This is really weird, and you'll never think the same. I do facial yoga. Yeah.
Go on.
It is fabulous. It is free, and it keeps you, you know, young looking and fresh looking. Been doing it for years. I can highly recommend it.
What does that look like?
Oh, it looks pretty silly.
Venus, your video.
No,
okay.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to put that on the web.
All right, that'll be bonus content.
You can look it up online. You'll see a lot of silly-looking ladies with fresh-looking skin.
And is this rubbing your face or pulling different faces?
Isometric exercises for your face.
Oh, right, so different contractions of different muscles.
Sure, just to work against gravity.
I love the face you just made there. That was brilliant.
I can't do it. I don't even recall what it was.
You're invited to a dinner party. You can invite two people from history, alive or dead, to sit next to you. Mm-hmm. Who do you want and why?
Well, I would start with George Washington. He is a fabulous person. I actually named my daughter after. He was a true American, and that he was a great self-promoter. You know, when they were getting together an army to fight against England, they didn't really have a commander. But Washington, he had this great uniform left over from the last war. So he put on his uniform and kind of rode around Philadelphia so everyone could say, you know that Washington guy? He looks like a commander.
Okay, yeah.
And he got the job. I love that.
Is that right?
Wow. Oh, yeah, wow. Totally true. And he was also a good example of someone who could learn to overcome his own biases. There was a lot of bias against what was then called Native Americans, Indians, First Nations, whatever.
Yeah.
And he had that bias in the original French-Indian War, and then he realized he was wrong. That he could learn an enormous amount from these people who knew the land and had innovative ways of fighting. Had he not learned from the American Indians, we might still be British today.
And who is sitting next to you and George?
I think George Balanchine was the other person I named my daughter from. Named her for George Washington and George Balanchine. For those who are not into the dance world, he was a Russian-born choreographer who remade ballet in an American format. And I love the idea of taking one art form and redoing it in an entirely different form. I think it's fabulous.
And what were the differences between the two?
Well, if you look at old-fashioned ballet, I was a huge ballet fan in New York, and I rarely go here because it's very classical, little stuffy, lots of, you know, fairies and princes and that sort of thing. Mm. George Balanchine did cowboys as ballet dancers. He did gas station attendants as ballet dancers. He brought it into the modern age.
Was he responsible for YMCA?
He wasn't, but I'm sure he would have. He loved pop culture. I guess I should take that farther because you made a really good point. He brought pop culture into an old art form. I love pop culture, and I think it can be used in so many creative ways.
Sure.
I love both those people there and why you chose them, because integration, how I always talk about it, is different from assimilation or segregation.
Yes.
And it's this taking the best of both and really forming something beautiful and new.
Sure.
That's great.
Do you have a value or principle or quote that you live your life by?
I do, and it's from an American baseball player, Robin Yount, who was the long-term shortstop for the Milwaukee Brewers, later right fielder, started out as a shortstop. You gotta put the ball in play. When you put the ball in play, anything can happen. Mm. In my case, I put the ball in play because I thought I'd be a professional voiceover. I am, but didn't make as much money as I hoped I did. But in order to practice being a voiceover, I started doing a podcast. And then the podcast turned into transcripts for the podcast online, which turned into a book, which turned into a speaking career. So you kind of put the ball in play. You never know where it's going to go.
And the name of the podcast, just for our audience?
The How to Live in Denmark podcast.
The How to Live in Denmark. On all iTunes, Spotify, everything?
Everywhere it should be.
Good. We'll put it up on our website soon.
Thank you, Thomas.
Apropos books, what book or books have had the most influence on you or would you most like to give as a gift to someone?
There's a book called The USA Trilogy by a writer called John Dos Passos. I brought it along, actually. It is absolutely huge. More than a doorstopper. It could be a murder weapon. Really brilliant. But it's actually three books
put
together.
Look at that. That's a proper read.
Yeah, The USA, the Trilogy, but it's called The 42nd Parallel, 1919. And now I forget what's the third one. Ed, you're holding the book. The Big Money was the third one. And it's a really great format. It's clips of songs, clips of newsreels, and many different characters woven together speaking as people actually spoke. So at a time when literature was considered, you know, something very high-minded and poetical, and you did long descriptions of the pretty flowers, this is gutsy, it's energetic, and it shows a country in the midst of massive change. In the midst of integrating many new immigrants and working to fight inequality and move into the modern world. It's such a good book. That's a really good picture of what the USA was like when it was written in 1938 and is like now.
Yeah, because I imagine it's, you know, we read a lot about Europe in the 30s, you know, in the run-up to World War II, but what's going on in the States in the 30s parallel to that?
Actually, I think this book was set a little bit earlier, but you're right, it was published.
Okay, it was set in the roaring 20s?
Yeah, actually right after World War One.
Okay.
World War I and right after World War One. And that is really the point in time when America becomes a world power. So you start to see all the people that made that for good and for bad, and male and female. He does an excellent description of, very good at characterizing women, which not all my male writers can do. But some of the other books that I like to give to friends are books about women that, coincidentally, are often by male writers.
Hmm.
Mildred Pierce by James M. Cain, I believe that came out in 1941. Great study of a female entrepreneur and what she gives up to achieve her goals.
Hmm.
The Odd Women by George Gissing, I think that's from 83. Very early feminist novel. I don't know if I'd give that to a guy, but I have given the book to many, many women.
Excellent.
Can you recall a failure that you had at some point in your life that you credit with a change in philosophy or a change in direction?
Yeah, I've had lots of failures. And to me, you fail forward if you've learned something from it. I worked at putting together a online community. I had a good boss, and a new boss came I didn't really like. Denmark's extremely flexible when it comes to the labor market. So this bad boss went to a convention, found a lady he liked better, fired me, and hired her. The end. That allowed me to start working for myself and doing what I really wanted to do. So thank goodness to that bad boss. I'm sure he's still out there.
If you're listening. How are you?
No, I mean, what a gift he gave me.
And what did you go on to from there?
That's when I thought I was setting up my voiceover business, which became the books, which became the speaking.
It's actually the greatest gift you could have
received. It was indeed. I didn't realize it at the time. But I love working for myself. I don't ever plan to work in a office job again.
Okay, I'm mindful of the time, and we're going to finish out the podcast today with one final question, which we ask to all of our guests, and that is, what do you think Denmark can teach the rest of the world, and what do you think your work and your mission, how to live in Denmark, can teach Denmark, if you will? So it's this to and from. What lessons?
Denmark can show the world that it is possible to have a high-functioning social welfare state. But so many people think that, oh, I got to go to Denmark, I'm going to get some goodies, man. And college, oh, it's free. I hear this from Americans all the time. So, like, if I get there on Tuesday, can I start my free college, like, the next Monday? Oh, and you get, like, free medical care? Good, because I would like this, this, and this. Oh, and I have three children. They get that too, right? They do not understand that you must put in at least as much as you take out. Particularly if you're a young, healthy person, you will be putting in more than you take out. If you've been educated elsewhere, you're going to be paying to educate someone else's kids. It's not a spectator sport. Everybody has to contribute so that people that need help, whether they're young, whether they're old, whether they're pregnant, whether they're sick, can get support. And people that think it's just a vending machine, yeah, I'll show up and I'll get all this stuff, totally wrong. It can work if everybody puts in what they can. How I can help, I really want to help Danes examine, I want to help Danes examine their unspoken expectations. Oftentimes, because they live in a monoculture, and it still is largely a monoculture, even if people have different ethnic backgrounds, there is still one basic culture in Denmark. They're expecting something without realizing they're expecting it. For example, a boss that expects his or her employees to tell them when he's doing something wrong. I've met Danish bosses who've gone to the U.S. and they're like, yeah, they love everything I do. They, you know, they're totally behind me. No, they're not. You're just expecting them to tell you when you're doing something wrong. Danes have lots of expectations they don't realize they have. And if I can kind of illuminate a little of this and this, hey, you know, the international's not acting oddly. You were just expecting this. That's not how it works in their country. That's not how it works in their culture. A good example is Danish humor. You know, everybody's supposed to, you know, be able to make fun of themselves. That's not universally true, particularly if they don't realize it's a joke. I often talk in my speeches about a Spanish guy who came to a business meeting, and he was a little bit late, 5-10 minutes late, came in, and he was wearing his very nice watch. And his colleague said to him, boy, that's a nice watch. Does it work? It took him a while to figure, oh! In other cultures, people would say, just kidding, got the joke.
Yeah.
They don't do that in Denmark, it's very dry.
Yeah.
So if they could take that extra step and realize that sometimes they kind of bring people in on the joke, that would be really helpful.
Excellent. Well, Kay, on behalf of Ed and I, it's been an absolute pleasure. Before we go, where can our audience find you, find your books? We talked about your podcast. Tell the world.
I'm at howtoliveindenmark.com. My books are available at the National Museum gift shop, and I believe Christiansborg gift shop, at Arnold Boos Gunstroil. You can also get them on Amazon, Saxo, Google Play, or from our own web shop.
Okay, and if someone wants to find you for voiceover or book you for a speech, howtoliveindenmark.com?
Yeah, they can do that, or go to kzandermelish.com.
Okay, so you have two websites running.
I have so many websites. I have two websites. I have multiple websites. kzandermelish.com will do it.
Okay, thank you for stopping by today, and to be continued, we hope, another time. And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, and help our podcast continue to grow. And until next week, see you on the GDP.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.